Hello and welcome to episode number 70 of the Lesbian Book Club podcast with me, your host, Claire Lydon. This month we have an interview with UK author and comedian Rosie Wilby, and you're going to hear that interview coming up very shortly. But first, let's see what's hot in the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as finding out what's going on in the world of lesfic and what's going on in the world of me. First up, the Amazon charts. And topping the charts in the US as I record this on July the 6th is Erica Lee with her novel The Last to Leave. Now, this one involves Courtney Fields and Nicole Dawson, who were high school rivals who thought they'd never have to deal with each other again. But 8 years after graduating, the two are thrown back together on a trip to Cabo with their two best friends. Throughout the trip, they quickly learn they get under each other's skin in more ways than one. And when their sexual chemistry becomes too much to ignore, they decide to fan the flames. Sleeping with your enemy isn't such a bad idea when you're never going to see them again, right? I think we all know what's going to happen here. There's going to be some Lukes and some feelings and some emotions all over, so messy all over the page, but so deliciously messy. And Erica Lee has a army of fans, and the book has already garnered nearly 300 ratings and reviews, so probably worth a look. Also doing well in the US is Monica McCallum with her latest book, When I'm With You. This one has Kennedy and Brooke, so ding ding, well done for the excellent US character names there. Kennedy and Brooke have circled around each other for years without getting to know one another, but getting stuck together during a post-college trip is going to change that. A growing friendship, an abandoned puppy, no one to act as a buffer between them is going to end up a lot of ideas they had about one another. Kennedy finally realises she may have to only scratch the surface where Brooke is concerned, and Brooke is terrified that she's falling in love with her best friend. This is an angst-filled enemies to friends to lovers romance. An enemies to friends to lovers. Is that a new trope that I'm not aware of? What's happened while I've nodded off to sleep and taken 40 winks? Yes, Monica McCallum. I keep tripping over my words today. Monica McCallum also has a big army of fans, and she is a reliably good storyteller. So check this out if you haven't already. Also, a devastatingly reliably good storyteller is Natasha West with her book Spark to a Flame, and this is a second chance romance alert. Now, baffling to me is that people don't love second chance romances as much as I do, but if you do, then this is probably a good one. You're in for a treat. This is Frankie Hudson left her hometown as a teenager and she vowed never to return. 20 years later, she's precisely where she wants to be, living in London, and she runs her own bookshop. She's got no time for love, but you can't have everything. But then disaster strikes, and Frankie is forced to break her promise to herself. She loses her business, she has to go home and to the town she loathes, and to her parents' house. It's not a high point in her life. And obviously, once she gets there, she bumps into Georgia Ortiz, her childhood friend's little sister, who happens to have grown up into quite the catch. And she's also a kick-ass lawyer and all-round hottie, of course. So I think we know where this one's going. But it's all about the journey, everyone. Get on board for the journey. In the UK, there's a lot of books still around in the lesbian fiction charts that have been there for, well, quite frankly, months. And unlike the US's got mostly sort of lesbian romances in the top, whereas the UK has got mainstream published books with characters who may or may not be lesbian, bi or queer women. You only need like one little side character for the publishers to tick the lesbian fiction box. So don't blame me if you buy one and there isn't much of a bi, queer or lesbian character in it. But one I know that there will be is Emma Donoghue's The Pool of Stars. And this is still doing well. It's set in the pandemic in 1918 and it's the story of three women who are affected by it. And it's still doing great business in the UK, and Emma Donoghue is a reliably fantastic storyteller. So even if there's only a side character as a queer woman, you're going to get a good story, right? And that, I think, probably is the same about The Girl Who Couldn't Leave by Catherine Miller. And there's also a slew of historical romances by Elizabeth Jane Howard entitled The Cazalet Chronicles. So that's the Amazon charts as I record this in July of 2021. And here in the UK, we are tiptoeing out of pandemic restrictions. Tiptoeing, I don't know about you, but I'll be keeping my mask on, mainly because I haven't had a cold or anything, any illness for the last 18 months. So mask wearing, it works, everyone. But apart from tiptoeing out of the pandemic, we're also gearing up for the big one, which is the Golden Crown Literary Society Awards, the Goldie Suits Mate. This year, it's an online event. The Golden Crown Literary Society Awards normally take place in a US city every year, but last year, because of the pandemic, they were online, and this year too. There's quite a few categories, and there are over 100 books are finalists, so have a look at the website if you want a full rundown, which is goldencrown.org. Now, included are the usual suspects like Melissa Braden, George Beers, Anne McMahon, Claire Ashton, Jay, EJ Noyes, and a host of others. I am also included this year. Now, I don't normally enter these awards. I haven't done for about 5 years, but I decided to do so after Before You Say I Do, a few readers asked me to. So I'm actually really happy to be a finalist in the Contemporary Romance Short Novels category. And I'm in good company with Elle Spencer, Chris Bryant, Lola Keeley, A.E. Radley and Lucy Bexley. So here's for hoping for a night of glitter and some authors winning gongs. And those happen on July 31st. So if you want to go along to the award ceremony or just the whole conference itself, it's all available online. So head over to goldencrown.org for more. The Lambda Literary Society have already given out their gongs this year. Again, if you head on over to lambdaliterary.org, that's L-A-M-B-D-A literary.org, there are categories there for bisexual, gay and transgender, and for LGBTQ plus in general. But of the lesbian categories, the winners were, for lesbian fiction, Julie Delgado Lopera for her book Fibra Tropical. In lesbian poetry, Pamela Sneed won with her book Funeral Diva. In lesbian romance, Alexandria Bellefleur won the gong with her book Written in the Stars. And in lesbian memoir, Jen Shapland won with her book My Autobiography of Carson McCullers. So congratulations to all of them, and we will look forward to the awards season galloping on at pace this month. As for me, well, what have I been doing since we last spoke back in June? Well, I've been getting into the swing of work after a 2-week break in the Scottish Highlands. Now, my wife and I were meant to be going away abroad to hot, sunny climes, but obviously the pandemic put a big hammer blow into those plans, and so we had to rejig, and we decided to go to the Scottish Highlands, which is a holiday that we've been meaning to do for years, frankly. And so we did, and we went up the last week in May, the first week of June, which coincidentally happened to be fantastical weather, and honestly we had probably the best trip of our lives. It was just amazing. I've only ever been to Edinburgh. We went to the Highlands. The scenery is just out of this world, and it's like you're on a different planet. I mean, you are in a different country, but you're on a different planet. It was very quiet. I expected it to be busier than it was. Everywhere we stayed was amazing. The food was great. The weather was incredible. The people were so warm and hospitable. We just had such a fantastic time, and we had a great break as well for both of us. We needed it. A nice 2-week long break. We really relaxed and just chilled. So that was terrific. But now we're back, and I've got to get back into the swing of working, which I am doing. So my next book release is book 8 in the London Romance series, and that is called Big London Dreams. And it is finally out on July the 28th, and it is currently up for pre-order on Amazon and Apple Books and Barnes and Noble. And if you want to know more, you can head to my website and you can pre-order via the links there. And that is at www.clairelydon.co.uk. Now, Big London Dreams is the story of Eunice and Joan from London Romance Book 7, Hot London Nights. It's my first crack at a historical romance, and I hoped I did the job okay. Fingers crossed, because it's a bit late now. I really love writing it, though. It's quite personal because it's set in London in the 50s, which is the time that my parents met in London too. So they were a great source of inspiration. I did quiz them about their lives and growing up there. And I've also read around the subject a lot, so... And my mum was a machinist in a garment factory off Oxford Street, and the two protagonists do meet while working as machinists in a factory off Oxford Street. So it was great to be able to bring the personal touch into it, as well as doing a lot of research and finding out gems about what London used to be like. I'm walking around London now with it in a new light, you know. I hope you're excited to read it. It's really close to publication. This one's been in the works for 6 months, so it's out on July the 28th. In new book news, I did start a different book before I went on holiday, and it just wasn't clicking for some reason. I think I will go back to it because I love that I planned it all out. I've done the whole outline. I was about 20,000 words in, but I came back and I couldn't do it. So I've just decided to put it on the back burner. I've started a new book that I came up with in the Highlands, and that one is cracking on at pace. I'm about halfway through. I've got the title. I'm not going to reveal it, but I can say this one is a fake relationship trope, which is a favourite of mine to read, but one I've never actually written before. So I'm excited to see what you think of it, but it is actually set in the Scottish Highlands, so my holiday was inspirational. In translations news, A Taste of Love came out in German in June, and that's doing really well. I'm pleased to say it seems to be a hit with readers, so I'm really pleased. In German, the title is Das Gefühl von Liebe, which is all sorts of fabulous. I do love the German language, so I love having books in German, even though I've no idea what any of it says. But thank you to everybody in Germany and everyone who reads German for buying those books. Of course, Bevor du sagst, ich will is also out, so I've now got two books out of in German, which is very exciting. And Before You Say I Do is coming out, I'm told, in Brazilian Portuguese this month. The publishers in Brazil keep moving the date because I think they're having a lot of issues with the COVID pandemic there and staffing and printing and all that shizzle. So, but I'm hoping that that one comes out in July. I think that they was meant to come out in June, they moved it to July, so we're fingers crossed for a July one for that. Okay, enough about me. Let's go on to the interview with the fabulous Rosie Wilby. Hope you enjoy. Joining me today is Rosie Wilby. Rosie is an award-winning comedian, author, and podcaster whose first book was entitled Is Monogamy Dead? She released her second book, The Breakup Monologues, this year, asking what we can learn from heartache and how it can teach us so much about ourselves and relationships. It's a funny and honest delve into the human psyche and what it takes to stay in a relationship for all the right reasons. She's also one of the few guests I've had on this podcast twice, so that's another feather in her cap. So welcome, Rosie.
Oh, well, I'm very honoured to be on twice. Thank
I know.
You very much.
Yeah, you should be. I think I've only had one other person on twice, so, you know, you should get an award or something for that. You're already award-winning.
Who was the other person?
Harper Bliss, who's a fellow lesbian romance author who I've written with.
Yeah, I know that name. Yeah, brilliant.
Kudos for that. So how are you today, anyway?
I'm okay. It's been a manic month. I think it's almost a month since the book came out. Well, we're now sort of getting towards the end of June. I don't know when this will go out, but the book came out at the end of May. So, yeah, it has been busy times, doing lots of interviews, writing articles for magazines, and obviously posting lots on social media, as you need to do as an author with a book out, and releasing episodes of my podcast, which has the same title as the book, The Breakup Monologues. And yeah, just in a bit of a kind of online world whirl.
Yeah. Have you done any sort of in-person events, or has it all been online?
Mostly online, because we're still in that weird transition phase. But I have done some nice in-person events as well, particularly just the other week I was at Wimbledon Book Festival recording a live episode of my podcast with my guest Shappi Korsandi, who of course is a fantastic comedian, and so just released that episode of the podcast, and that was really nice. And I did another event at a place called Charleston House, which is near Lewes, where I was interviewing an author, and that was good fun as well. But yeah, the live events, considering what my diary has normally been like over the past 10 years, they have been sort of few and far between, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
But yeah, the online events are good too, but it's a very different feel.
Yeah, I think that there are sort of pluses though, right? Because I did a Zoom event, and like 60 people turned up from all around the world, and that could never have happened if I'd have done it in real life. So, you know, there are plus points
yes.
as well, right?
Oh, totally. And I hope that we do more hybrid events now. I think that would be good, where yeah, we have people live in the room, but then also other people can join us from around the world via a live stream. I think that would be really good to do more of that.
Yeah, definitely. So tell us a little bit about where you're sitting today. What can you see?
Oh, well, I'm sitting on the top floor of our house in Bromley. So we had a nice loft conversion, and this is definitely the best space in the house because it's nice and light, and we've got a sort of little Juliet balcony looking over the rooftops of the other houses. And actually, one of the interesting and bizarre things about the house just opposite from us is that they have a massive model Spider-Man climbing up the side of their house, which we actually didn't know was there until a couple of years ago when the trees were sort of cut down and cut back a bit, and we're suddenly like, oh, and it kind of revealed this weird superhero that is scaling our neighbor's house.
Wow.
It's really big and really, really weird.
That is really weird.
Yeah.
There's, yeah. Are you not tempted to go knock on the door and go, why?
Yeah, we don't know them that well at that house. It's kind of, it's not on our actual street. It's sort of the neighbours on the next street. But when we're looking across from this window, I mean, honestly, anyway, people are like, what are you talking about? I don't live there. I don't know what you're talking about. but anyway, they're not sort of on our immediate little street where we know everybody.
Right.
And don't know, they seem a bit more sort of aloof, so I haven't really spoken to them about their Spider-Man.
No, probably best not. I did have another author on, and she told me that in her office she's got a life-size poster of Linda Carter as Wonder Woman on the back of her door. So that's the only other superhero.
Yeah, that sounds good though. Yeah, a bit of one.
Inspirational, I thought. So tell listeners a little bit about your writing journey and how you became an author.
Well, as you've mentioned, I've been a comedian for many, many years, and well, before that was a musician, so I've been more involved with live performance than sort of writing on the page. But when I started looking into the psychology of love and relationships for my comedy shows a few years ago, it became clear there was so much more to explore, and I started writing a lot more articles for magazines and newspapers, and it made sense a few years ago to turn one of my shows, which was called Is Monogamy Dead, into my first book, which of course I spoke to you about back in 2017 when that came out, and that was longlisted for the Polari First Book Prize and shortlisted for the Diva Literary Awards as well. When I think at the at the award ceremony, we were on a table at dinner with you.
We were. Yes, we were both. Yeah. We were both shortlisted that night, weren't we?
We were, different categories.
Yep.
Yeah, we were shortlisted. So, so that book, got some lovely reviews and feedback, and I definitely got an appetite for writing, you know, longer form non-fiction and quite narrative non-fiction, which I think shares a lot in common with friends like yourself who write fiction, who write stories. You know, I do think that non-fiction is essentially the story of your ideas, and I do turn my non-fiction very much into a narrative, more of a memoir, where I'm incorporating some of the science about how love and relationships work into my own personal story, so that it makes it accessible and easy to follow for people. And it is a non-fiction book that you would get the most out of if you read it from start to finish like a novel, rather than sort of dipping in for a chapter about a particular theme that you're interested in, which you might do with a sort of drier textbooky non-fiction book.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of knew that I wanted to do another book, and after the first book had come out, I started this podcast called The Breakup Monologues, which kind of followed on thematically from the work that I'd been doing in my comedy work and in the first book, looking at love and relationships. I started this chat show where I was talking to other people about their funny or poignant or weird breakup stories, and how we recover from breakups, how we communicate about breakups, and how now there's all this weird language around breakups, like ghosting and breadcrumbing and submarining, and what on earth do all these things mean? So it just seemed like there was a lot of material to talk about relationship endings, something that I think culturally we haven't always talked about enough, and it does help us, I think, to share these stories of, you know, painful experiences. It does help us to share that and not feel alone, and then we can hopefully heal better and recover better and have healthier future relationships if we feel we've been heard and other people have related to our stories. So I kind of felt what I was doing in the podcast, you know, had this appeal universally across different gender identities and sexual orientations and age groups. I really felt there was a potential for a book, and I wanted to try, if I could, to get a major publisher this time. I wanted to give that a go. I mean, I know people like you who've done self-publishing and done so well with that are incredibly inspiring. But I think with my comedy career, I've always done things in quite a DIY way, and I've always been involved in every facet of it, designing my posters and flyers and booking my tour venues and, and writing the shows and doing my PR, that I kind of, in the literary world, I've sort of wanted to have somebody doing some of those bits for me, even though that has drawbacks and disadvantages as well, of course, because you only get a small share of the money when you get your royalty statement at the end. Though there are pros and cons to whether you go with a publisher or self-published. But I think because of the way my headspace and life is right now, and how much effort and energy I've put into doing a very DIY kind of comedy career, that I have you know, been very proud of how I've kind of built that in quite an indie way, I didn't know if I had all the resources and tools and information to do that with my sort of literary output as well. So I did go about finding a literary agent and then finding a publisher as well. So I was, you know, I was really excited to sign with an imprint of Bloomsbury, their health and well-being imprint Green Tree, and be able to put out, you know, a hardback book, which is lovely actually, because my first book was just out in paperback, and so it is nice to have a hardback book with a cover that looks really lovely and that I was really, really happy about the design. Although there is a really interesting story about that, because the cover of my book, I think, looks like two female faces or feminized faces facing away from one another, but the very first design I was sent looked very clearly like a man and a woman, and it was sort of more of a heteronormative cover.
Right.
Yeah, and so I kind of said, oh, you know, I think really considering my story and how strong an emphasis there is on lesbian relationships, and how many of my really loyal readers and followers are, you know, are gay women, queer women, bisexual women, you know, it would probably be better if it looks, if it sort of hints at being two women, two female faces, rather than a heteronormative heterosexual couple. And the publisher were fine and happy to change it, but I think it's an interesting indicator of the assumptions and the biases of the world that we live in, that a designer who'd just been given a brief to design a cover for a book about breakups thought, oh yes, a man and a woman breaking up.
No, definitely. Yeah, I was just having a look at it when you said that online. Yeah, it's, I think it can be whatever you want it to be, in the end, isn't it? That's how it's ended up.
Oh yes,
so that's,
I mean,
good.
It could just be an abstract design. It doesn't necessarily look like two faces, but it did to me.
Yes.
Quite immediately, and I think maybe that was something that I saw in it. So,
yeah. Cool.
Yeah, that it's interesting. It's
yeah. And that's, no, but that's really interesting, what you were saying about, you know, you went, I completely understand, you know, if you're doing all your comedy stuff yourself, you want a bit more help in the publishing arena. But kudos to you for getting an agent and getting a big five publisher. So that's very exciting. You can get into all the bookstores, which is the advantage of going with a mainstream publisher. So let's get on to the book,
yes,
the book itself, which talks about what we can learn from. I've just finished it. Last night, in fact. So I was like 80% Ooh. Through last night, and I was like, I'm going to finish it before we talk. And I really enjoyed it. It was great.
Oh, thank you.
No, it's a really, really good read. And like you say, it's kind of part memoir, part looking at the science and psychology behind heartbreak and what we can learn about ourselves and how we can use it to stay together. So if someone's listening to this and wants to know more, can you give us a couple of the key takeaways?
So what I think one of the key takeaways is that the subtitle of the book hints at this as well, because the subtitle is The Unexpected Joy of Heartbreak. So I think one of the key takeaways is that heartbreak, while it may feel awful at the time, can be an opportunity if we harness it as an opportunity for learning and growth and healing. And I do credit my several breakups, which you can read about in the book, with arming me with better communication skills, better decision-making skills, better being able to articulate my desires, needs, boundaries, my sexuality, and being able to choose a partner who is more compatible with what I'm looking for, I suppose, but also who, you know, I just feel we've been able to grow this healthy relationship together.
That does really come across in the book, but you are very searingly honest in the book. you share a lot in the book, you know, as I say, it's memoir-y. So about your current relationship, you are now engaged to your partner, so congratulations on that. But you do share a lot. How difficult did you find writing and sharing what you did, or are you used to that because you are a comedian?
Yeah, I mean, I am used to that. I think it's slightly different when it is written down on a page than when you're saying it on stage and it's kind of, it's in the moment and then it's gone. Although, of course, you do often say the same things many, many times as a comedian. Well, spoiler alert, it's not always written freshly for that audience that night. Yeah, I think it really feels out there in quite an exposing way. And yeah, my girlfriend and I, yeah, did have some tricky conversations about some of the bits that were going in. And I know other lesbian comedians as well have had similar conversations with their girlfriends. My good pal Jen Brister wrote a book about motherhood recently, and yeah, she had some conversations with her partner about some bits her partner didn't really want to go in, but her publisher and editor really loved. And it's that really difficult negotiation of wanting to be honest and share the reality of what a relationship is like, and that is sort of the good and the bad, but also not throwing your partner under the bus, you know. And I think, I hope, that what comes across in the end is that this is somebody that I really love and respect and who is my best friend, but yeah, who sometimes annoys me and sometimes I annoy her, and sometimes we're a bit in each other's way, like when we're perimenopausal together on this boat holiday in this really cramped and weird little boat where in the chapter called Hormonal Hell, you know. And sometimes that is just the reality of a relationship, and I think it's generally healthy to share those annoyances, to sort of say, you know, you're not the only one who probably sometimes wants to kill your partner, you know, but then you get over it because you actually remember that they're amazing.
That is a great sentence there, talking about killing your partner, but also saying they're amazing in the same sentence. That's relationship in a nutshell, right? but no, it's really great read. And I think, you know, part of the power of it is that you are so open and vulnerable in the writing. So kudos for that, definitely. But, you know, it did make me laugh because you are described in it by some, I can't remember who, as the queen of breakups, which, which, you know, must have made your girlfriend raise an eyebrow.
Yeah, I mean, I do say, that's in the introduction to the book, I say it's a weird kind of accolade because it kind of makes it sound like you're actually really bad at relationships if you're, yeah, you know, always breaking up and you're the sort of queen of breakups. But yeah, I think the point is that I've had enough breakups to have learnt something, a thing or two. And I actually start the book by saying, if you do want to know about breakups, you should ask a lesbian, because statistically we do tend to have more breakups than anybody else, but in many, many cases do it more consciously and respectfully and amicably, because of course the lesbian community historically has been quite small and quite interconnected. And so lesbians have always tried to stay friends with ex-partners where possible and do that really consciously and compassionately.
Did you say research that has been done that shows that lesbians are far more likely to break up more generally in their lifetime?
Well, yes, the divorce statistics from the Office of National Statistics really do show that lesbians divorce at several times the rate of gay men and are rapidly overtaking straight people. And you see this pattern all around the world, you know, in countries where they do have marriage between women, you do see the divorce rates being much higher for women than they are for male couples.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yes, it's unexpected, isn't it?
It is unexpected.
It goes against our social kind of understanding of male and female genders, which of course is all old hat and silly kind of rhetoric anyway. I suppose traditionally had this narrative in our heads that women, you know, kind of tend to the home and look after the children, and, you know, even in kind of queer relationships, maybe there's one woman we think assumes that more maternal and traditionally female, in inverted commas, role. But of course that's all a load of rubbish. But I think we still have these ideas lingering in our psyche, in our consciousness somewhere, that women would be the ones to want to keep a relationship and keep a family together, whereas actually perhaps women are the ones who are keener to call time on a relationship if it isn't fulfilling their needs or if it isn't working, whereas men might just muddle along in a different way.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think you said in the book as well that straight women are catching up, right? So they're breaking up with men too.
Yes, they are. 75% of heterosexual divorces are initiated by the woman.
Interesting, really interesting. You talk as well about the language of breakups, and you did touch upon it a little bit earlier in the interview. So a ghosting I'd heard of. I was actually ghosted by a publisher. So that's I know you talk a little bit about this in the book. You talk about professional breakups as well as as personal breakups. And I was contacted by a mainstream publisher a couple of years ago now. And they wanted to have a meeting to talk about, possibly publishing one of my lesbian romances or a future one. And I thought, well, you know what, I've never spoken to one before, so I'll take the meeting. And then we arranged it, and then I never heard anything again. So ghosted.
Oh,
yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, well, that's just it, isn't it? It's weird when people just disappear because you think, oh, what happened to them?
And it did actually affect me like that. I was like, well, what did I do wrong? I wasn't the one who initiated this. It was so strange. But you talk about some other terms, so pocketing, submarining, benching and icing. And these are all new to me. Could you go into a couple of these? And one of my questions as well was, haven't the meaning of them has always been around, I think. It's just we've got labels to put on them.
Yeah, I agree that people have always kind of deserted one another. You know, back historically, soldiers would return from war to find their sweetheart with somebody else, and they literally hadn't been writing to one another, writing love letters or whatever. But yeah, I think technology has now facilitated just being able to strike up conversations quickly and end them just as quickly. Tinder sort of makes matching, dating, romance feel a bit like a game where people are just disposable and you just swipe them away, quite literally. There are all these terms now for really just variations on ghosting. I mean, submarining is sort of where you ghost them and then you keep popping up again. Another one I like is Marleying, where you pop up again at Christmas. But yeah, icing, kind of just like putting something on ice. But there is an interesting caveat about that, because I realised that there is a sexual act that also has that name. So some people have been slightly confused about icing, because there is apparently another meaning.
Okay. I've never heard the term, but I can imagine what it might be.
Yes, okay. It was a gay man friend who told me.
Right, yes, yes. So, as I said, bucking the trend of all these books that you've written, you're now engaged to your girlfriend. So, can we expect the next book to be the marriage monologues?
Yeah, well, maybe. And certainly, you know, it's a change of brand, isn't it? It's a gear change from breakups to marriage. But I do think actually that's sort of quite a nice, neat, happy ending in a way to solidify this idea that I'm putting forward, that actually breakups are almost a rite of passage. They're a learning experience. And then we get to the healthier relationships when we've had one or two heartbreaks in our lives. Yeah, who knows what will come next? I mean, I'm definitely exploring more. I'm continuing to do the Breakup Monologues podcast because I really enjoy that. And now we can record live again out in the world. I'll be recording episodes at festivals. I also have some irons in the fire with some possible audio and radio pitches for looking more at how the queer community have sort of inspired interesting ways that we now all look at relationships and think about monogamy and ideas about family and breakups and things like the sort of idea of friends as family and how we kind of think about community and how the gay community, you know, during their years spent on the margins outside of being able to get married and have children and have some nuclear families, how they came up with these really creative solutions that are quite interesting and quite inspiring, and how the straight community have sort of taken those on board really and co-opted them. And so, yeah, I have a proposal in for a possible radio program that would be on a major network, which would have a really queer slant, which I'm hoping they might go for. It would be a kind of comedy, science-y programme, but we shall see. But I'm kind of enjoying at the moment kind of infiltrating the sort of heteronormative media with quite queer stories. And I had an article that I wrote about marriage where myself and my fiancé were dolled up for a photo shoot in white clothes, and they did this very kind of queer magazine article in what I would have thought of as a very heteronormative women's magazine. And I'm kind of quite enjoying, yeah, kind of infiltrating some of the straight media with quite queer stories. So I'm trying to do more of that at the moment.
Oh, cool. Yes, do it for the team, Rosie. Which magazine was that?
It's Good Housekeeping.
Oh wow, that is quite a
very. I never bought it before. Yeah. Yeah, Davina McCall on the cover. I mean, when this podcast goes out, I don't know if it'll still be the current one, but it is still the current issue at the moment.
Okay.
Click through to page 74.
Okay. Yeah, it's going to come out fairly soon. So, yes, if anyone's listening, go out and rush out and buy a copy of Good Housekeeping. You wouldn't expect that article in there. You might also get a lovely soup recipe, I imagine, as well.
Well, Davina, talking about perimenopause and menopause, which actually is quite interesting. But yeah, I haven't flicked through tons of the magazine yet, apart from my article.
Yeah.
But there we are.
Yeah.
But I think it is good, because I always thought of those women's magazines, those kind of glossy magazines, as very straight. So, you know, I think it makes a broader audience think about, you know, the fact that there has been this huge inequality for such a long time.
Hmm. No, definitely. And I think it's an interesting topic as well, like you were saying about how the queer community creates their own community when sort of family and the norm fails. So as Armistead Maupin says, the logical family rather than biological family.
Exactly, that's it, yeah.
Yeah. So you were saying about, you know, you've written two non-fiction, you're doing a few radio shows, you're carrying on with the podcast. Have you got any plans to write a fiction book in the future? Because I think you could write a cracking rom-com with your relationship knowledge and your natural funny bone.
Well, maybe. I mean, I'm not planning one just at the minute, but, you know, it's definitely there in the back of my mind that I might try fiction, because I think it's, you know, I read fiction, I really enjoy fiction, so I definitely think it would be fun to do at some point. It's just finding the time, isn't it? But yeah, it's definitely there on my longer to-do list, not the immediate to-do list that I'm going to do this week, but a longer to-do list has sort of thinking about fiction ideas on it somewhere.
Okay, so watch this space. And have you had now friends come up to you asking for relationship advice? Now you are this sort of queen of relationship advice.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, although that was sort of, I think that there were one or two people who came to me for relationship advice before this kind of book came out. But what I have done as well is I've occasionally done a spoof couple counselling in character as my character Dr. Love, who was the character from my comedy show from a few years ago called The Science of Sex, who was this kind of subversive science teacher, you know, who was getting overexcited at doing her sex ed lesson. So yeah, at various events I have done spoof couple counselling, and I'm going to be doing that again, I think, at a British Science Festival event later in the year. So people just come in for a little kind of 5 to 10 minute one-on-one session and get some kind of spoof love poetry, and we draw some graphs of their relationship and so, you know, kind of parody actual relationship therapists.
Sounds good. So if anybody's got any questions, head on down to that festival and put them to Rosie. So final question, if you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose and why?
Oh, wow, the love child of any two writers. Gosh, that is a really that is a really interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I think just because I'm feeling quite queer, and because I'm often thinking about queer writers, I would probably just go with a couple of queer favourites and go Armistead Maupin and Sarah Waters. But then because they're both gay, I guess they wouldn't have a love child, would they? That doesn't really work.
Well, they could have one. The wonders of modern technology.
Yes, that's true.
So yeah, no, that works. That works a treat, and it's a lovely queer answer to finish up with. Perfect. Well, thank you so much for taking the time, Rosie. It's been fantastic to speak to you, as ever, and I look forward to welcoming you back for a third time in about 3 or 4 years' time, right?
Oh, yes. Well, maybe I can be the first person to have a third appearance.
Let's make that a goal.
Let's try. Yes. Yeah. Well, I'd love it if people do get hold of the book, because being a lesbian on a major publisher, it is good to kind of get that support, because even though my publisher are lovely, there is a certain feeling that, you know, you need to kind of get the numbers and sell enough copies and really kind of mobilize the audiences who are gonna love it, you know, so they don't feel that they've taken some terrible risk on some niche gay middle-aged woman, you know.
So you know, no pressure on you, dear listener, but
dear listeners,
you really need to go out and buy this book.
Yes, I'd love you to.
Yes,
and I'd love to hear from people as well and hear about their breakup stories, hear what they think. I'm very approachable on Twitter and on social media platforms.
Okay, and she might even turn into Dr. Love if you ask her nicely. I should ask as well, where can people find out more about you if they want to?
Oh yeah, well, probably the best place is Twitter at Rosie Wilby. I've also got an Instagram at Breakup Monologues as well. So they're the best places. And there's a website, rosiewilby.com, that's just a kind of launching pad platform for all of those other bits and pieces, where people can find me on social media. But you can also listen to my podcast, The Breakup Monologues, on all good podcast platforms. And of course, the book is The Breakup Monologues as well, and that's on all the good bookie websites and in all the bookie shops as well.
Brilliant. All right, Rosie, thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's the end of this Lesbian Book Club. This is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. If you'd like to find out any more about me or my books, just head on over to my website at www.clairelydon.co.uk And while you're there, you can sign up for a free lesbian romance by filling in your email in the box at the top of the page. My books are also available anywhere books are published or streamed: Amazon, Kobo, Barnes & Noble, Apple, Google, Bella Books, Ilva Publishing, and direct from me on my website. Again, that's www.clairelydon.co.uk. And there's always a bargain to be had. Thank you so much to The Lesbian Lounge for hosting and producing this podcast. It's much appreciated. And join me next month when I'll be having some more hot book club action. See you then.